Hello everyone, welcome to Ridgefield Tiger Talk. I'm your host, Dr. DeSantis, and I got a great show for you today. Joining us is Dr. Tony Shoa. Hi there, Tony.
Good morning, Wes. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I hope you had a wonderful break. I know I did. We are now returning back to our normal schedule of podcasts. We try to do a podcast every Friday if we can. But we wanted to have you on the show today to talk to us about some new developments in the special education world here at Ridgefield Public Schools. But before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks, Wes. And what the listener might not know is that you and I have been trying to get time together to do this podcast for, it seems like, months now.
It seems like months. Yep.
It's some sort of intricate celestial alignment for us to have time together. So it's nice to be here finally.
Absolutely.
Talk about a lot of these things and decided to actually spend the time with you.
Yeah, it was crazy. It's one of us would get sick and then a little thing would happen. So we'd have to go and cancel. It was like confluence of events. And I'm so happy I finally get to have you on the show.
We did it. We made it. So thanks for having me. I'll tell the listeners a little bit about myself. I'm the assistant director of special education, which means that I work with Dr. Hanaway in the special services office, assisting her in directing special ed, and special ed includes that department and all of our related services. Mm-hmm. And it also touches a lot of other special services departments like psychology, nursing, EL services, and homebound instruction for kiddos who have mental or physical needs that prevent them from coming to school. So it's a kind of a broad department, and I work across all 9 of our schools, including the transition program for 18 to 22 year olds who require special services. So mm-hmm. 9 schools, an additional other location, as well as working with our alternative high school too. So you could say maybe 11 different locations. So it keeps life spicy for me. And it's a very dynamic job, and I enjoy it very much. And I've been here for almost 6 years.
Wow, that's awesome. And we always call it, and just for the audience who's listening, your department is special services, not just special education. And that's huge. Like you just said, it covers nursing, it covers 18 to 22, it covers a whole umbrella of things. And it's just great that we have both, you know, Dr. Shoa and Dr. Hanaway to help lead this. But there have been some new additions and new developments here at special education here in Ridgefield. And we figured, heck, you know, why don't we just do a quick podcast about it so the Ridgefield public knows what's going on.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk about some of these things in addition to what we've already spoken about at our Board of Ed meetings, because as we know, not everyone can sit through an entire board meeting.
Exactly.
If you're at home listening and you're putting little ones to bed or making dinner, you often don't get the entire scope of the board meeting. So I'm happy to hone in a little bit on some of the things that we've presented to the board and to the public about special ed for the coming year and what's going on now. So a few things that are coming up within our budget cycle are the ever-expanding scope of special ed, and that relates to not only how we're broadening our services to meet every need, but also just the growing prevalence of students who require special services. And that's not just a Ridgefield thing, that's national.
Across the board, yeah.
Students requiring IEPs or Section 504 plans, that number continues to go up every year. And in Ridgefield, we've seen that growth pretty significantly over the last 6 years since we've been here, and even before Dr. Hanaway and I started in district. So we're excited to make sure that we're offering the most appropriate services for kids and always engaging in the sort of cycle of self-analysis of what are the best programs based on the performance data we're seeing.
Absolutely. So let's start with the RISE program. First, what is the RISE program? Quick little definition so people know, and how has it expanded?
Sure, thanks. RISE is for our most functionally complex.
Yeah.
I pulled a Willy Wonka there. Did you catch that?
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Reverse it. Functionally complex skill development needs, students with those needs that require RISE services, which is an acronym that stands for Ridgefield Intensive Special Ed, is a program that we have in almost every school now, so that we have students educated in their home zone school whenever possible. And we take that very seriously, which is why it continues to expand. And we want to make it so that every student receives as much individualized service as possible. So we keep those classes small. And as of the 24-25 school year, we'll have a RISE program in almost every school, 8 out of 9, with Veterans Park being the one exception to that. And I'll talk a little bit about Veterans Park in a moment, because they also have a special program in their building that's newer and going to be expanding through our budget as well. But we are excited to have started Branchville RISE this year, and also Eastridge RISE will be reopening. They used to have RISE, and then kiddos graduated on to high school and we didn't need it there for a couple of years, but now it's going to be back.
That's great. That's great. And it's so cool to see that, you know, we're trying to get this program at every single one of our schools over time. Is that the goal, or right now are we just kind of seeing where the chips fall and where would be appropriate to bolster the program?
Yeah, so we engage, when I say we, Dr. Hanway and the school principals and myself, we engage a little bit of what we call pipeline discussion, right? And we see kids come in through pre-K, which is something else I'd love to talk about this morning. And our pre-K numbers continue to grow as well. But kiddos who, like I mentioned before, have that multifunctional complexity of skill development needs that we can kind of predict what they're going to need in K. With some predictability, and then we can figure out based on where their home zone school is, our cohorts are going to look like year over year. Although we do have, you know, a fair number of kiddos move in too, so that reduces the predictability of it.
So
it becomes even more important to offer the program in as many schools as we can, so that we can catch the needs of every kiddo, regardless of which school they move into.
Absolutely. So definitely being dynamic in interpreting these situations. So let's talk about pre-K.
Yeah, so pre-K, as the public may know, because pre-K is open to peer models that can apply to pre-K. It's not just a special education program. We do have peer model classes where kiddos that don't have IEPs are paired with kiddos with IEPs to be social communication models. But in terms of our IEP numbers, we've seen our referrals from the community, which is how pre-K largely functions. We have what we call child find activities that kiddos that are suspected of having a disability, which is what it's called under the law, are referred to us from the community or from birth to three services for kiddos who are identified early. And that number has really ballooned even before COVID, but we've even seen it, I think, to a greater trajectory increase after COVID. And I would say probably to date, we're looking at a well over 100% increase of referrals within the last couple of years, which is a huge number. And our number of programs at the pre-K level has expanded. And if listeners are listening also to the meetings, you'll have heard that Dr. Hanway and I also want to start a pre-K cohort at Veterans Park. They're at Barlow Mountain Elementary School have basically grown to the limits. They've grown to the size of the fishbowl.
Yeah.
Now we need a new fishbowl for all of our new shiny fish. So all those little kiddos, well, not all of them, but we're identifying a cohort to attend VP next year.
Oh, that's awesome. And what is RTP?
RTP. So another one of the... apples of my eye, RTP stands for Ritual Transition Program. And transition, when I say transition, I say if you can imagine with a capital T. We talk about transition all the time for kids, but transition with a capital T is transition under federal law, which is for students who continue to require special education services to be college career ready post high school graduation.
Oh, okay.
So some students who complete all their high school credit requirements, still need aspects of daily living skills, other functional skills to access their community that are eligible to receive their services up until the end of the school year in which they turn 22, which is a Connecticut-specific statute.
Oh, okay. That's really cool. That's really, really cool. Now, you know, we have these expanding programs. We're also looking to improve current programs. But like, what does like the rest of the school year look like in special education? Like, do you have events up and coming, or how does that kind of look?
Yeah. And so coincidentally, speaking of the transition program, our transition coordinator, who's also the transition teacher, special education teacher, Jessica DeValentino, is hosting our very first transition fair, in Ridgefield. And that's really exciting because transition, again, with a capital T, doesn't just apply to students who are in that transition program. It can apply to any student who's age 14 or up under the law to discuss and possibly design transition goals in their IEP, because they need to develop skills that are germane to post-secondary life, whether that's college, career, or daily living skills, or employment, that might need information, because it's a very complex thing to go into the world, no matter who you are, but especially if you have skill development needs. The idea of college and career post-secondary can be very, very daunting. And so Jessica is putting on this transition fair to really open the doors and invite families in this sort of like open forum to learn more about various topics of transition, whether that's accommodations at the college level, whether that's adult services, transportation as an adult, if you're not able to drive yourself. So lots of different topics that are going to be very exciting. And I'm hoping that we have a lot of families come out to attend. And if they're interested, they can RSVP to the flyer that went out in our newsletter.
Oh, that's awesome. That's so cool. And, you know, just to see all these events that the public can connect with is huge. Even if it's something that your child may not need, it's always important to know what's happening, because these are, you know, your child is going to be part of that community. So they want to see it through the whole spectrum, if you will.
That's true. And also, yeah. If you think of Richwood Public Schools vision of the graduate, right?
We
envision that for all students, and whatever we can do through transition fairs, through our programs and services, yep, for special ed, we want to make sure that every kid, every student has all the skills that they need to be successful after they cross the finish line, if you will, and leave our schools, leave our walls with that diploma. It's not just mm-hmm. enough for us to see a student graduate. We want them to be successful in life.
And what about summer?
So summer is always a very exciting time for my department, because under federal law, students might require special services during summer months to make sure that they maintain their skills. So that's oftentimes when special ed kicks into high gear, and we work with our kiddos who have that need, that skill development need, to make sure that those skills are maintained. So we have what's called ESY, or extended school year, which is the term under the law every year. And our programs run in various capacities all the way from pre-K to age 22. But something that I'm really excited about is yet another apple of my eye, one that we started kind of because of COVID, that we weren't sending students and supporting students at the Boys and Girls Club anymore, that we brought a program in-house and we started calling it Best Buddies, that is similar to our pre-K model in that students without IEPs are paired with students with IEPs who are working on social skills programming in a day camp style setting. And they have fun, they do cooperative play, they engage in music class, phys ed, sports, games, field trips, swimming, and it really becomes somewhat like a bridge type experience, but also
amazing,
but built in that way so that kids are picking up social skills through direct instruction with a psychologist, a speech and language pathologist, and special education teachers. So that's going to be, I want to say, our fourth year running that program already, so very exciting.
That's amazing. Am I missing anything else?
I could go on and on, Wes.
Yeah.
How long do we have on this podcast?
I know, right? Well, we want to keep these short so people can just be up to date and know what we're up to.
On top for now.
Yeah. Well, we'll kind of close out the show with this, because it's something that a lot of people are always asking me about. In fact, earlier this week, I did a YouTube presentation on AI. So people can go to the curriculum website and go to the curriculum YouTube channel to take a look at that, where I answered some questions from the community about AI. But you know, we in the district have been doing a lot of work in this up and coming technology, how our educators are gonna use it, eventually our students are gonna be interacting with it. We're trying to anticipate its impact, how it's going to affect basically just pedagogy in general. How is it affecting special education from your lens?
So I don't know about the affecting part yet. I think it's so new.
It is new, yeah.
But luckily, thanks to you and to everyone on the AI committee, I think we're getting ahead of it as much as we can. And with someone at the helm like yourself, who's so knowledgeable and
thank you.
and open-minded about it, we've been able to start a special services subcommittee of your committee, which is very exciting for me. I've got a few practitioners across multiple disciplines and district who have volunteered to be on this committee that are starting to conceptualize how it could impact our practice and could impact students who have special needs by using generative AI tools in isolation to sort of develop a sense of what kind of output we can get that would be of value to us as special educators from the type of input we put in. So for example, I've got a speech and language pathologist, a special education teacher, a guidance counselor, myself as an administrator, and we're all looking at this from different lenses of what do we do in our day-to-day that we could utilize generative AI to either save time in our work by having AI do some of the heavy lifting and some of the structural
absolutely
of some of our work that we can verify and move back into for editing. I sort of equate it to, and I don't know if you and I are about the same age or not, but it was about, you know, high school age for me where the internet was really becoming robust enough.
Same here. Yeah. Late 90s. Yeah. It was.
Right. So it started to alleviate some of the research work that we were doing in high school and that, APA and MLA citing and some basic research made it a little faster than walking up and down the aisles of the library and pulling books off the shelf and leafing through. And so I think it's kind of similar to that in that it doesn't make the work of our clinical writing or our own research or the way that we design goals and objectives or write IEPs or instruct kids any different necessarily. It might just make it faster. At least that's what I'm envisioning now from the work that we're doing. But as we all know, time is so precious. And so
absolutely
AI can alleviate some of the more repetitive or mundane aspects of work that we do clerically and in special education, then maybe that is of great benefit. And so the experimentation is very exciting in that way. And who knows where it will go aside from that or beyond that.
Yeah, I would say just for the audience who's curious and listening, like, you know, what are some of the stuff that we've been experimenting with? I think two of the easy ones that current AI technology is really good at is rewriting already written work into certain formats. So, you know, a teacher might have a resource that wants to give to a child, but the child's reading level may not be at the level of the resource. It's very easy for the teacher to use an AI product to bring that resource to the child's reading level. And that's something that, you know, we never really had access to very quickly, very easily. The teacher would have to do it or have to find some sort of substitute resource or, you know, make a brand new resource themselves, which could be a daunting task. And the same goes for translations. So if you have a student whose English isn't their first language, we're seeing a lot of these AI products are phenomenal at translations. So much better than how, like, remember, like, Google Translate would, you know, get the tenses all wrong or whatever. I know you've learned some other languages, and if you use Google Translate, it's not great. Now it's getting much better with generative AI. So that's something to really, you know, think about, and it's only getting improved every month. It's impressive where we were last year at this time versus where we are now.
And I'll say this too. I mean, just like with the advent of the internet that I alluded to a few moments ago, it really is our responsibility in being diligent to our work and service to students that we delve into these new technologies, right? That we need to understand first how it can be valuable or even how it can be a threat or a danger to our students. And so I'm so glad to be in that work with you so that we really have a thorough understanding of this before it does get more deeply applied to our practice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. First off, Dr. Showa, thank you so much for taking the time out of your incredibly busy day. It's been really hard we're like ships passing in the night. So I'm so glad we were able to hammer each other down and get this done.
Me too.
Keep an eye out for all the announcements coming from the Special Services Department. There's always a lot of stuff going on there. And if you're listening to this podcast, I already got you. And we need more people to listen to this show. So let everyone know. All they have to do is go on their favorite podcasting app. We're on everything, even Spotify. Just type in Ridgefield and boom, Tiger Talk is the top one. We are getting lots and lots of listens. I'd like even more. So definitely stay on top of that. Because Ridgefield Tiger Talk is where else are you going to get super concise, direct info about this awesome school system, right?
Right.
All right. So again, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
No problem. And I want to thank the audience, everyone. This is Dr. D signing off. Have a great weekend.